It's a hobby or a sport?
Yes, it's a hobby. It's just fun stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm very happy to have Clémence.
Thank you.
And Clémence will present their hobby efforts called Skip2S, and I'm very happy to hear about it.
Thank you. So welcome to Malcol. Does everyone hear me well? Okay. So I had always this question of what happens when you design and implement the entire stack? Because I kind of have like this obsession about operating systems from like when I was really young. So I started building like operating system like Visual Basic. But now I got a bit better at it, and now I build them in C++, I guess. So quick information about me. So as you said, my name is Clémence. By day, I mostly work on a browser engine. But by night, I like to hack on operating system. My website is smnx.sh, but everything was in the QR code, and I will show it again at the end of the slide. So what are we talking about today? We are going to talk about my hobby operating system called SkiftOS. It's aimed to be this kind of general purpose desktop environment and operating system. And it's based on a microkernel. And it features what I will mean a rich C++ framework. And obviously, I hate POSIX and I will fight against it. So what are the goals of this project? Mostly it's about having fun and learning, but maybe do a bit of research and try some new stuff. So what is the current stage of the project? It's mainly a really early stage. Most components are mostly like proof of concept, meaning that I've basically like written like the 10% of the code that provide like the 30% of the features. It's in total around 100,000 line of code, and it features a full desktop. And so from now on, this talk will be will follow the boot process of the operating system, and we'll stop at each stages, and we will discuss what each of the components and what they do and how they work. So I have included the build stage in it because building an operating system is already kind of complicated. So I will then we'll talk about the handoff, so from the platform firmware to the operating system, how we handle that, then init system, and finally what happened during the runtime of the operating system. So during the build time, we'll talk about the build system called Qt-Kit. So what is Qt-Kit? Is this kind of a cargo-inspired build system and package manager for C++. It's brutally designed for C++ modules. And it's, I would mean like it's battery included, meaning it will support all the life cycle of your software, meaning it can do linting, fusing, profiling, and obviously building your project. And what is the main idea between Qt-Kit is the Qt-Kit component. A Qt-Kit component is like a loose bag of code and data and a manifest that describes some piece of the operating system. So for example, here I have a component called kermsys .skif, which is the SkiftOS implementation of the kerm system framework, meaning it's the abstraction over all the system APIs. And to describe this component, we use these JSON structures. So on the top, we have like the name of the component, what kind of component is it. Here, it's a library. And then we have like this tiny predicate that tells, this component will enable only if it's in the system is skiffed. But as you can see, it's a list, so you can, it's kind of a whitelist kind of thing. Then it will tell what is required. For example, here, it will require the C runtime. And it will provide kermsys.impl, so the implementation of kermsys. And we can have like multiple implementation. For example, we can have like kermsys.posix that will abstract POSIX under kermsys. Okay, so since we started to see kerm through Qt-Kit, let's continue with kerm, because kerm is really at the bottom, at the foundation of the whole operating system. So what is kerm? It's tried to be like this big general purpose library, kind of like a Qt, or like the .NET framework, meaning that it will try to support everything like from basic data structures up to a full GUI applications. And And it's split mostly into two parts. The freestanding part of the library, which means like it's this part of the library that doesn't require any operating system that can be shared among all the other components. And the mostly hosted part that require an operating system, mostly like for doing UI libraries and UIs and stuff. And it takes inspiration again from Rust, Go, and C#. I see the question coming about Rust again. So, and it's not written really in C++. Well, it's written in C++, but it's really like this calm flavor C++. So, you know the meme like C++ with C with classes? Me, I prefer like C with lambda modules and coroutines. We don't use exception because since we want the framework to work at a really low level, exceptions are not available, so we use a monadic error handling with a result type and a try macro. And we make use of all the Clang safety checks we can use. For example, we use a Clang lifetime bound to check that a reference doesn't outlive the object that it is being owned for by. And we use unsafe buffer usage that is kind of like unsafe for C++. Meaning you cannot use raw pointers anywhere in the operating system. It can only be done in like some kind of unsafe block kind of thing. And so this is what an hello world in CARM looks like. So this is just an hello world in user space. So you can see we have like beautiful C++ modules. And another really nice specificity of CARM is that it's fully async by default, meaning that your entry point is an asynchronous task. And this asynchronous task takes two objects, that is a system context and a constellation token. This constellation token kind of works like a sick term in POSIX, meaning that it will get triggered and try to cancel every downstream task when, for example, the user asks the kernel, yeah, kill this, I don't want it, it's spinning or it's bugging or something. And here I just like a basic hello world application, so it just does UI run async, and then we pass it just a UI label with hello world. And it's kind of a Swift UI slash Jetpack Compose inspired UI library. We might see a bit more after. And obviously, since we are in the macro kernel dev room, we might care more about RPC. For now, we don't really use an IDL language. We use these C++ structs, where you just declare like your message. Then in this message, you have a type that represents the response, and then you have the parameters. And we use the quite limited, not for too long capabilities, reflection of capabilities of C++ to try to generate code around this. And how do we use this? Is that you just have like to create an IPC client, tell it to connect to some kind of IPC endpoint. For example, here it's Stratashell, which is our UI server. And then you can just call it using client.call async, and all RPC are asynchronous. So it will just return some promise that can be awaited, and then we can continue. And obviously, no exception, we use again this kind of weird macro called co-try. That kind of, it's a specialization for a coroutine, but that's not too much of a detail right now. Okay, so now we saw the base of the framework. Let's talk about the bootloader. So the bootloader is not really, it's a simple UEFI bootloader. And it uses, I will follow my slides. So it's this simple UEFI bootloader. It kind of works like a systemd boot, where it's basically just chain load like like UEFI executable, or it can load a new ELF file and then jump into it, which will be your kernel. It has its own tiny boot protocol called handover, which is basically just a memory map with some added attributes. For example, you can have like a range of memory, and to this range of memory, we attach some metadata like, oh, this is a frame buffer and this is the size. But it's quite limited in this way. Oh, yeah. And finally, the bootloader uses exactly the same UI library as the rest of the operating system, meaning that we get this all these beautifully vector graphic with subpixel anti-aliased font and such. So it's really nice. Okay, so we saw the bootloader. So the bootloader will load a new component called the Urged microkernel, So what is the Earth microkernel? It's what some people might call a pragmatic microkernel, meaning that we don't strive for academic purity in it. It's quite small and simple. I think it's good for learning, I guess, because it's pretty simple, but it implements everything a microkernel should do. And it takes care of core kernel responsibilities, which by this I mean IPC, preemption, memory management, and IRQ dispatch. And it has a quite simple object model. I won't describe all of them. It would be quite boring, I guess. And it has around 25 syscalls. Some people say it's better to have less or more. I don't care. OK. To get a bit more of a vibe for the code in the kernel, let's look at the send syscall, meaning the syscall that it's used to send an RPC message. And as you can see, it's written in a really idiomatic C++, I would say. And we use C++ to make this code quite safer. For example, here we have a buffer that comes from user space, and every buffer and data that comes from user space is wrapped in this user slice type. And you cannot access this type up until you have like kind of differentiated it with the with function. And this with function takes an address space, and at the bottom, it takes everything you want to access, and we make sure that everything is mapped correctly, and that the user space cannot like move data around or do nasty stuff with your memory. And then in the body of the function, we see that each task is attached a domain, and in this domain, we'll try to get a channel based on the capabilities, and then we use this channel to send the message and some capabilities with it. So that was everything for the Earth microkernel. Now the next step is the strata service layer. So now we have exited the kernel space and low-level stuff, and now we enter the system-level stuff. So strata is kind of a loose bag of services, and how do we enter strata? We enter it through strata CM, the strata component manager. The strata component manager is loaded by Earth or microkernel as the first executable, and it will then directly delegate to a process called strata ini, which is our init system, that will then read a bunch of manifests and spawn a bunch of services. But what are those services? So at the bottom, we have strata component manager, as we say. And then we have a strata device that is for now a big service that all of our device driver. We might change that later, but right now it's like this. Then we have the strata file system, which all our virtual file system and how we access it. Then we have a strata input that takes a raw HID event from the strata device and then turn them into something that the UI can better understand. It's kind of like IBUS kind of thing. And then we have a strata shell, that is our user interface. But to discuss it, I prefer going into the next chapter. Then we have application on top. So the next chapter is about the IDEO desktop environment. And what is IDEO? Is this quite general purpose, like a user interface. It's built on a custom display protocol. And like it's kind of like Wayland, but way simpler. And it has what we call an adaptive UI, meaning that this UI can scale from like a smartwatch up until like a full desktop environment. And it will, and all the app will be the same, and they just like scale on based on what the device is capable of. As we say with the bootloader, it has the same vector base, some subpixel TLS, and with a beautiful fonts as the rest of the operating system. Okay, so that was it for the general architecture of the operating system. Well, not all of it, because all we know is that operating systems are just bootloader for browser engines. So, Skift has its own browser engine that is called Vev, and Vev is not really part of the general project. Is kind of more like my daytime work that I have ported back to the operating system as a fun project, I guess. And it's like a full browser engine, meaning that it has like HTML and CSS. It can render like some web pages. I will show them during the demo. we don't have JS for now, and I think it's pretty fast. So, demo time. So, up. So I will use, obviously, Qt to boot my operating system. We'll do a bunch of Ninja invocation. And we have like, yeah, it booted at least. Don't look at the time. I didn't have the time to implement RTC. Okay, I can just look at my display, I guess. I want to full screen it. No, it's not this. Okay, so it has like a normal UI we will expect like in a normal operating system, so I can unlock it. And let's look a bit of some application. So first of all, we can like look at, I don't know, like we have like basic like calculator stuff. It does math, obviously. But you can like switch in like into tablet mode, and then it will just like adapt the UI for the new form factor, and you can switch easily like this. And then I can close it. Nothing fancy here. Then we can look at the web browser. So I have I took some snapshot of a website because we don't have a network stack yet. But we can look at the homepage of the internet, I guess. Ah, no, not this one. This one. Yes. And okay, I'll go back to Google because maybe it will be a bit more interesting. But maybe, no, it doesn't work. I cannot resize. Okay, it's okay. But you can see that the browser is kind of capable. We don't have like the logo, things that are not aligned, but it's quite nice. Okay. And so maybe I can show you another thing. And it crashed, I guess. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, we are back. We are so back. Okay. Okay, and obviously, it can run Doom, I guess. Yeah. Fun fact, it will go faster if I go into like tablet mode because it doesn't show the rest of the UI. Yes, because we don't have like a GPU acceleration, everything is on the CPU, so. But I can play a bit of Doom. I'm not sure if I'm good at it, so I should be good at it. Like, all men here will be screaming, I guess. But I can kill bodies and some stuff. Yeah, it does the thing.